We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, friends. This episode of Big Blue Banter is brought to you by Prize Picks. Head on over to Prize Picks and use promo code BANTER and they'll match up to $100 on a new deposit. Thank you and enjoy.
Welcome back. It's the Big Blue Banter, New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always by my co-host Nick Filato. Today we're here to catch you up on a little bit of Giants happenings with the NFL owners meetings in stew. And, you know, some people might say, because Nick said this to me before the podcast, that I look a little red. Well, the reason being, yeah. I just came out of the steam room after a long workout at the gym. I am also going back to the protein shake, so we're going to hope that this one goes better than the last time with regards to that. But there's no telling and there's no certainty with that regard. But look, I didn't have a lot of time. Nick didn't have a lot of time tonight, so we had to get this thing rolling. And so we want to catch you up before we do some draft profiles. We want to catch you up on things going on with the Giants. And I felt like there were some interesting things said, and Nick did as well, at the NFL owners meetings, between what John Mara said, the Giants owner, between what Brian Daboll said and what he might have hinted at with regards to potentially a change coming, maybe, maybe not, in 2024. And then obviously also what Joe Shane said, not as much there. Joe Shane doesn't really like to reveal that much, and that's a good thing. So, Nick, I want to start with you just getting your overall sense for anything you heard from John Mara let's start with the funny one or the interesting one. Here's John Mara's quote about the offensive line, and I want to get your take on this. His quote about the offensive line was, "It's ridiculous." I love this line, and it's a continuing source of frustration for me. I'm just going to stop there for a second, Nick. I feel like it's great. I just love hearing the owner say, it's ridiculous. It really is ridiculous, this offensive line situation. We're going on a decade plus of horrific offensive line play from the Giants. How is this even possible? It's so hard to even fathom how this could be possible. I would love to look around the NFL at some point, Nick, and do like a 10-year study and see if any other team has had it as bad as the Giants have had it on the offensive line over the last decade. I'd be curious to see if any team's even in the same boat as the Giants. I'd be surprised to see if they were. He says, it's time to get it fixed. We've invested in a couple number one draft picks on the offensive tackles. We have a number two draft pick playing at center. Now we have spent some money in free agency. We have a new offensive line coach. That was an interesting line, I thought. I expect us to be a hell of a lot better this year. Oh, this was certainly a priority going into the offseason to get offensive line fixed. You can't win in this league unless you have a good, productive, consistent offensive line. It's what we had years ago when we were actually winning. And we have to get back to that. I think we have the right pieces in there now. We'll see. Life in football starts in the offensive line. If you can't block them, you're not going to win. Any thoughts on this quote from John Mara?
I could just see John Mara up in the owner's box throwing trash cans around every Sunday being like, I spent a first-round pick on a left tackle, got a first-round pick, center, second-round pick. It is. It's wildly frustrating how inept the Giants offensive line has been. And we've made a point on this podcast. Like, dude, they have made investments. They've made investments in the offensive line. It's not all through neglect. Although I think you can say there were certain Gettleman years where he was like, oh, Matt Parrott, pick 99. He's going to be fine. Like things of that nature that do piss us off. But there were plenty of investments on the offensive line and they didn't hit. But I want my owner to be upset about that. And I'm not surprised by it. There's really not like, what else is he going to say? Oh no, the offensive line's been great. It's awesome.
Well, exactly. I did find it interesting that he said, two things here that I found interesting. He said, I think we have the right pieces in there now. Meanwhile, the Giants didn't add that much in this offseason yet in free agency, right? They added John Runyon, who was a pretty solid guard. I wouldn't say he's like top of the line on Wenyu or any of those top market guards. They added Illuminor, who we like and we're all hoping good things for, but at the same time signed for 2 years, $14 million. It's not like the NFL was jumping out of their seats to get him on the team. And then they signed some depth pieces there. So I think part of what he said here, Nick, was interesting to me, which was we have a new offensive line coach. I wonder if that's factoring in a lot to him saying what he said there, which is I think we have the right pieces in there now. Because, yeah, you want to give credit to Runyon and Illuminor and those depth pieces. That's fine, and we're excited about them. But at the same time, you know, the Runyon contract is very similar to the contract we signed a few years ago when we signed why am I blanking on his name? Glowinski from the Colts. And that one didn't work out at all. That wasn't the right piece in there. And then as far as Illuminor goes, it's harder for me to find a comparison from a money standpoint, but maybe it's kind of like the Patrick Omame contract. Now, again, I think he's going to be better than Patrick Omame was because Gettleman saw something on film with Omame, and within a year, he was cut by the Giants and out of the NFL. Hopefully, it doesn't go that route. But to me, the offensive line coach part was the interesting comment there. And the Giants also, by the way, Nick, hired an assistant offensive line coach as well yesterday.
Oh, yeah, Kirk Ferentz's son. That's Kirk Ferentz, Iowa Hawkeye son.
You come from Iowa? I got to love you, right? If you're an offensive line coach with the Kirk Ferentz, like nobody produces linemen like the Iowa football team.
Oh, yes. And we also signed the Giants, that is Austin Schlotman and Aaron Stinney. And it's just the investments. And look, none of those names, Stinney and Schlotman specifically. Stinney is respectable from what I understand. I have not gotten to his film, but I know he played some games down there in Tampa Bay last season. And he, I mean, Tampa Bay didn't necessarily have a great offensive line, but they won a playoff game. So they were a capable offensive line, right? Look, Joe Shane did this last offseason. Defensive line sucked. They couldn't stop the run. We talked about it a lot. What'd he do? He went and he signed a linebacker and he signed a bunch of defensive linemen. A'shaun Robinson, Raheem Nunez-Roches, ended up drafting Jordan Riley. Now it's a seventh round pick. I get it. This year, it was John Runyon, Illuminor, and then these two depth pieces. And I don't know if they're done. And I think that's where it gets really interesting. Because if somebody does fall, dude, I was watching Washington's tape. Dude, I was watching Washington, and this kid's not going to fall. But Fontenot and the other one, too, the other tackle. Those guys are really good, man.
They're good.
They're very good at football. I would be a little bit surprised if the Giants went in that direction, maybe in the second round. But if if Fontenot ended up falling, then I would not be surprised. But my point is, John Mara, the New York Giants organization, they understand. They've understood for the better half of a decade that they need to fix this offensive line. And I think Joe Shane is the guy to do that, right? Yep. Joe Shane can identify talent, right? It hasn't worked yet from Evan Neal, but that's why you tweak and you move things around and you change your offensive line coach and you try to find the right way to get the most out of that player. So we know there's talent there. We saw it in college. Now it's just having a contingency plan in place if it does not work. And the Giants did that already. The Giants already found that in Illuminor, who has at least respectable tape as a tackle, close as last season.
Yeah, that's a great point, too, because it's not like if you have to turn to Illuminor, you're in a position where you're like, oh, this guy might also be Evan Neal level bad. No, we've seen him play, and he's not going to, we're probably not going to get an all-pro left or a right tackle out of him, but we're going to get somebody who's not going to kill your game. He's not going to destroy, dismantle a game plan. Like at times, unfortunately, somehow, Nick, Evan Neal has. And it's crazy to even think that a number 7 overall pick could even do that. But that's the case.
Of course. And just think about what happened last year. The Giants just a lot of calculated risks, as we say, right? Like Josh Azudu. Oh, yeah, you're going to be at left tackle. The Andrew Thomas thing, that was so shitty that happened. But it happened. And they didn't have contingency plans in place. They let Tyree Phillips walk. They ended up getting him back. Matt Parrott was not the guy. So at certain points of last year, team that just won a playoff game, they trusted Josh Azudu to play left tackle, very unfair to the kid, and they had to put Justin Pugh, a guy who was straight off the couch, in at left tackle when he was supposed to play
the Bills game, right? Yeah.
The Giants and Joe Shane, they identified, look, that's not happening again. That is not going to happen again. We can't allow it to happen again, and I appreciate the fact that they at least identified what seemed so obvious even last year.
Agreed with you on that. So I'm still a little bit more skeptical about his, we have the right pieces in there. I think he said, we'll see. For me, it's kind of a situation, Nick, where I'll believe it when I see it, when it comes to the Giants up the line decade straight. I've seen these stories before. I've seen these quotes before. Hopefully it works out this time. And I guess I'm more hopeful, I would say, than in the past, but that's probably not true. I've probably been hopeful all of those times as well. So it is what it is on that front. We'll have to watch and see on film. But Mara also had some other interesting comments. He said on quarterback Daniel Jones, I know a lot of you speaking to the media here. I know a lot of you killed Daniel for his performance this year, but we had the perfect storm. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Guys got hurt. The wrong guys got hurt. Let's face it. For a while, we couldn't block anybody, and Daniel was getting hit all the time. I still have every confidence in the world in Daniel. Let's put a better team around him. Hopefully, he'll get healthy, and I think the real Daniel Jones is the one that played in 2022, particularly down the stretch in the playoffs.
Okay, still believes in him, but then he came back and he said, I will fully support Joe Shane going out and drafting
him. Oh, we're going to get to that one in a second.
Yeah, but again, what is he going to say at this point? He just gave this guy so much money. You'd want him to say that. You're not going to be like, oh, Daniel Jones sucks. Look, sure. There's a lot of contrition on the part of John Mara that he believes he failed as an owner to surround Daniel Jones with the proper infrastructure to allow him to grow and develop into the quarterback that Dave Gettleman thought he was when the Giants selected him at 6th overall back in 2019. John Mara blames himself for that, for probably the hiring of Jason Garrett, which he probably had his hand in, for the recycling of coaches. Okay, you develop with Pat Shurmur, Pat Shurmur's gone. Bring in Joe Judge, didn't work out. Jason Garrett, didn't work out. And now he was on what is like third or fourth offense in as many years. So I think John Mara identifies that and he wants to make it right. But at this point, it's just like, how long are we going to do this? What's going on, Big Blue Banter listeners? I'm excited for the football season for
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Several reasons. And one of those reasons is Prize Picks, which is North America's largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform. And it's so simple to use. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including professionals, sharks, and people who are going to exploit you, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections, and you just watch the winnings roll in. It's very simple to play and gives you a little extra skin. I've set my picks in less than 60 seconds. There are so many stats to choose from, and the withdrawals of funds are easy and quick. Dan and I will be adding a segment to our show before every game where we pick our favorite stats, more or less yards or touchdowns, what have you, and we'll be discussing why from a scheme, matchup, and game theory perspective. I love their promotions and how easy their interface is to operate at Prize Picks. I may select more on tackles for a loss from Bobby Okereke or Kayvon Thibodeau next game. They also do other sports as well. It's a really cool experience. Please join Dan and I in the fun of Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. You will not regret it. You ever feel sluggish or out of focus? Are you stressed? Has your digestive system caused discomfort or flatulence like a certain co-host on this podcast during a live stream? If so, you should check out AG1. When I started drinking AG1 daily, I could feel a real difference in my daily health. I had more energy, I was better off at the gym, and I could focus on my work in a much more efficient manner. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Not only did I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I recommend AG1 to all my family and friends because AG1 has a team of doctors and scientists that formulate around the latest science and maintains high quality standards within the industry. Even my friends have started drinking AG1, and they always tell me how energetic they feel and how it's helped them out at the gym, and also it's helped them manage their stress levels. That's why we're happy to have AG1 as our partner. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to drinkag1.com/banter. That's drinkag1.com/banter to check it out. Our mental and physical well-being is of the utmost importance. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all need to take that very seriously. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Big Blue Banter podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New York, New Jersey, Arizona, if you will, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/banter to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/banter. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, include EE System.
Yeah, and I think two things can be true at the same time. The Giants have failed Daniel Jones, but it's also possible Daniel Jones was never going to be an elite NFL quarterback that you want to have as your franchise quarterback. Those two things are not mutually exclusive, and that's something that a lot of people can't understand, but that's how I feel about it, and I know that's how you feel about it as well, and it's pretty much a reality. But, you know, he has point there. Like, there was a time where they couldn't block anybody. Daniel Jones had it really bad last year, and, you know, he says hopefully he'll get healthy, and that's something we'll discuss as well because they had some comments on where he's at in his recovery. And then he says the real Daniel Jones is the one that played in the 2022, particularly down the stretch and in the playoffs. Now, the question marks that we have that we've discussed countless times in this pod, but just to reiterate, are one, have defenses adjusted to what Daniel Jones put on film in 2022 and that system, and, you know, taking away the B gap runs, what else is left there? Taking away the quick hitting passes by driving down on them, what else is left there? That's a question Daniel Jones himself will have to answer by, you know, letting it rip and throwing into different spots of the field more often, seeing it quicker, getting the ball out of his hands more fast. And he says, particularly down the stretch in the playoffs. Well, the playoffs were a mixed bag, John. I mean, Minnesota game, unbelievable. Jones, that was the best I've ever seen him. Philly game was horrible. Jones was terrible in that game. He threw for 150, an interception, no touchdowns, barely could move the football for first downs in that game. I know Philly was great that year, but at the same time, the counter, you know, the exact polar opposite of that was the Minnesota Vikings defense that year. It was as bad as it gets. There were miscommunications in his own defense constantly on every snap, and the coordinator got fired. So if you're going to use the excuse that Philly was too good, we can't worry about that, well, then you got to look at the other side of it with Minnesota as well. So I'm just hoping, Nick, if he does get the chance to start this year, and I think he will, probably for week one, almost no matter what, if his recovery goes well, that he becomes an even different version than the 2022. He becomes a better version than that, someone who is willing to take shots and just someone who processes it faster, gets the ball out faster. Just get the ball out of your hands, man. Don't let it get to the point where the pocket's starting to break down. Understand where that space is post-snap and throw the ball into it.
And that's the hope.
Yep. And we'll see what happens there. Now, there was also the comment he made, as you told about, kind of hinted at, which was, this was the most interesting one to me of all of what John Mara said, Nick. So I'm curious to get your take on it, on the possibility of, on the possibility of drafting a quarterback. John Mara said, if Joe Shane and Brian Daboll fall in love with a quarterback and believe that it's worth picking number six or moving up, I certainly would support that. I let the general manager and head coach build the roster. We've operated the same way for many years. If you have conviction about a player, I'm not going to get involved. I'll question them about it, make them defend their position. But the only time I'm going to get involved or exert any influence is if I think a conduct issue. There's a conduct issue off the field. That's not happened in this group. It's happened on very rare occasions. And then this is not in the quotes from what I'm reading right now, but I saw this on Twitter from Connor Hughes. John Mara also said that he would support the Giants drafting a quarterback at six or trading up. That one was interesting. And he also said the Giants have been looking at quarterbacks. That was interesting. And he also said that his front office has told him this is one of the best quarterback classes in a while. A lot of interesting comments at the end there that I thought were revealing that I did not expect him to say.
Yeah, and the Giants are not planning to be picking this high. So if it's realistic and you have to trade next year's first, which we don't like, we like having first round picks here. We love going over the first round of the NFL draft. But if the Giants could trade up to get someone like a Drake May, or if they feel like JJ McCarthy is that guy, maybe you could sit at six. I'm not 100% certain. The Chargers are a prime candidate to trade out of five. It's really interesting on what's going to happen, because it does seem like it's shaping up this draft where it's going to be quarterback, 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 wide receiver, just mixed in for those first like six picks possibly. And I think there's going to be trades.
Well, maybe Joel to the Chargers. That's the one that's possible. The only potential wrench in the plan.
Yes. And I think it's just funny how the coach of the Chargers is the coach of JJ McCarthy at Michigan, with Harbaugh too. There's a lot of like fun connections, but to your point, or to John Mara's point, that's what he has to do, man. You delegate to Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. If they fall in love with somebody, allow them to trade up, allow them to make the necessary moves to improve this roster, to get the New York Giants back to a place where they're consistently competing for the playoffs. They haven't been there we were in like high school.
Oh, for consistently, like I always consider when you take the next step as a franchise. So like the Giants won a playoff game in 2022, 2 years ago, and they made a wild card. That's cool. That's good. They made a wild card in Eli's 2017 or 2016. They lost the playoff game. That's all right. Whatever. I always consider getting to that next consistent level, the level we want them to be at, you and I, Nick, because we're not really chasing random wild card appearances and wins, is winning your division on a somewhat consistent basis. You don't have to win it every year, but winning the division. The Giants haven't won their division in a really, really long time. I'm pretty sure 2011 was the last time the Giants won the NFC East, unless I'm mistaken, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. Which
we've
is
only
insane.
Made the playoffs twice since then,
right?
And we didn't win it in 2016. We didn't win it in 2022.
So you're not a good team until you're consistently competing for and a good amount of time winning your division. So that's really what it has to get to. As far
as Baltimore Ravens, a team like that, like just consistently they're in it. Like every year before the season, they're like, oh, well, Baltimore, can't rule them out. They might be able to win it this year. Like a team like that. And we haven't been like you said, man, we haven't been like that in quite a while.
Yeah. And I think the reality of the situation when it comes to how these people view the Daniel Jones situation is it's more of a touch and go type of situation for the Giants. They're going to give him an opportunity to rebuild that value in their minds. But I don't think they're at the point right now where they view him as a definite long-term fixture for this franchise, because nobody's grinding quarterbacks like they're grinding these quarterback prospects, tape of quarterback prospects and visits and private visits and talking about, oh, we'll be open to trading up or drafting one. No one does that when they have like a Joe Burrow on their roster. No one does that when they have a Justin Herbert on their roster. No one, a lot of these teams aren't even doing with like Kyler Murray on the roster. He's not even that good. So I think they're in wait and see mode. But, Mara said on the possibility of if they draft a quarterback and having him compete with Daniel Jones, he said, why not let them compete and let the better man win? Even if we draft somebody, I expect Daniel to be the starter when the season starts. He'll get all the reps, assuming he's healthy. So I don't see that being a factor. And, the way I see it, Nick, I kind of always agree with this mindset. This is one that I think having not played, organized football at the high school level or college or NFL level always gives me a different perspective and potentially wrong one and just incorrect one, not being involved in that mix. Because, I always view it as, for me, a quarterback room, I don't mind adding competition. Like if I'm the Bears GM, I would have never traded Justin Fields for a six. I would have left him in there to have talent at my quarterback position, quarterback two. I would have drafted Caleb Williams. And now I have a sick quarterback room that has Fields and Caleb Williams. But of course, the other side of that is the people who tell you, no, you can't do that. It impacts the locker room. You just can't have those guys in there, especially because obviously the Bears had a lot of people pining for Justin Fields, DJ Moore, and those players. I think there's a factor there. But as far as what Mara is saying, like, I'm kind of with that. Like, get as much talent as you can in the quarterback room is kind of how I'm at with it, where I'm at with it.
Yeah, same here. And this also sets up that the Giants are so inclined to start Daniel Jones next year if he's healthy.
Yeah.
Now you can have the luxury of sitting this player behind Daniel Jones, having this player learn from Daniel Jones and possibly having some sort of changing of the guard after this year. And I know there's a lot of cap implications that factor into that that must be weighed in, but it's just another option that the Giants will have. And now you have a future plan if you are not fully sold on Daniel Jones being your guy, if you're Joe Shane and Brian Daboll.
Yep, completely agree with you. All right, Mara also said this on Saquon Barkley leaving for the Eagles. It was tough. It really was. Everything he did for us on the field, off the field, he was a class act in every respect. I hated to see him leave. I certainly hated to see him go in the division. On a more personal note, I have 14 grandchildren who have his jersey. It was tough breaking the news to them as well. Saquon is everything you want a player to be, but let's be honest, I would have preferred it was out of division, but I have enormous respect for him. The people that are criticizing him for doing that to me are way off base. These guys, their careers are so short. I understand you've got to take the best deal out there. That's what he did. He grew up in the Pennsylvania area, so I don't begrudge him for that. I'm not looking forward to having to play him twice a year. I got to be honest with you, Nick. This is my exact take on the Barkley situation. I'm not with the fans who are like, you shouldn't have gone to the Eagles. This is so disrespectful. He took the freaking best deal. Not only did he take the best deal, he went back to where he grew up. Okay, that's something that I would want to do as a player too. He gets to play behind an amazing offensive line with an amazing offensive line coach. He gets to play on a team that went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago and was 10-1 last year before they broke down. It's the best GM in football. Like, this is easy decision. Yes, he's going to his division rival after saying he wanted to retire a Giant and be a Giant his whole career. Well, guess what? He would have been a Giant his whole career if the Giants valued that position, paying that position. They didn't. So I can't begrudge him for that after the fact. So I'm kind of right on Mara's side with this one.
Yeah, we've talked about this already. I have no ill will towards Saquon Barkley. I just hope he doesn't do all that well with the Philadelphia Eagles when they play the New York Giants. You got to do what's best for you and yours, man.
Okay, and now we also have Joe Shane, who said he went back and looked at the 2021 roster to see kind of where they were at from a progress standpoint on a roster construction basis, and he says, it takes time. As much as you want instant gratification, and nobody wants that more than me, I think you have to believe in the principles and the terms of how to build the team long-term, and we're going to do our third draft right now. It takes time. When I look back at 2021, I just think where we're heading in the right direction in terms of bringing our types of players in that we're looking for schematically, Daboll for his offense, and we'll keep making progress there. So what are your thoughts on kind of where he's at with that?
I mean, I don't really have anything too pertinent to that. That's what I expect him to say. It's a process building a team. Just think about that 2021 roster, though. Think about the wide receiver position that he inherited. Kenny Golladay, Kadarius Toney. Holy crap, man. At least they had Darius Slayton on the roster at the time, right? Like that was the reality that this dude inherited.
Crazy.
Now, he at least had Dexter Lawrence. He at least had Andrew Thomas. So he had those two. He brings in Kayvon. He brings in Evan Neal. We'll see how that kind of works out. Brings in Deontay Banks. I don't feel like Joe Shane, and then we've discussed this, man, but like he's not doing a terrible job right now. He's not. But the Giants need to figure out this quarterback situation and what they want to do moving forward. And we'll see if that happens at the end of next month.
Yep. And he had some things to talk about the offensive line, but it's most of what we got over. I thought he had an interesting update on Daniel Jones' recovery. He said, I got an update Friday. He's running on land now, so he's off the Ultra G anti-gravity treadmill, and he's throwing. Knock on wood, no setbacks. He is in there attacking it every day and doing a good job. Every patient is different, and you can't really predict the swelling is going to occur and there's a setback, but he's on the right track right now. It's day by day, week by week. Hopefully there's no setbacks. I thought it was interesting just because I remember hearing Daboll discuss Drew Lock and how he told Drew Lock through the spring, you're going to get a hell of a lot of reps to learn our system. And so I'm curious if Daniel Jones can beat even the timeline the Giants have for him, which is essentially training camp right now. I think that's essentially where they're at. And the plan right now is give Drew Lock a shit ton of first team reps during OTAs, during mini camps, during all of that. And maybe if they draft a quarterback as well.
There, I have nothing quantifiable to substantiate what I'm about to say, but it does seem like all these quarterbacks who tear their ACLs like during the season around this time of the year, they're like, oh yeah, training camp. We'll get them back. And they're never really back for training camp. It just like seems like that. And then it goes into, oh, is he going to be put on the PUP? Oh, is he going to be put on the active roster? And it's just one of those things that I feel like just like following fantasy football, that's something that happens with a lot of these quarterbacks who tear their ACL mid-season in the previous season. So we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
He also mentioned that Darren Waller decision on him possibly retiring. Just going to, you know, they're just going to give it time. They're going to give him time, Darren, to make his decision on if he's got his heart in this thing. And he said, we're excited about Jack Stoll and Chris Manhertz, two tight ends who, honestly, for what we love, Nick, I'm pretty excited about those signings.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
Stupid to be excited about blocking tight end signings, but like, it's not stupid. It's orthodox to be excited about blocking tight end signings, but like, I love line of scrimmage players, and I love tight ends who can block, and it's always going to be something I value at that position. And he said, look, you have to be patient. There's ways to acquire players throughout this process. He's like, we did it with Jason Pinnock. We got him at the final cutdown. There's different times of the year to acquire players. So I'm not going to rush Darren. We're going to keep that conversation between us, and we'll see what happens there.
I love the fact that even if Darren Waller's consternation led to the Giants going out and signing both Jack Stoll and Chris Manhertz, then it was perfect consternation, in my opinion, because I wanted the Giants to add these types of players. Look, if Evan Neal sucks next year, right, you still want him to have the confidence you put him out there. There are a few tight ends in this league that you can put next to him that are these guys that you can get off the scrap heap that are going to help him from a blocking standpoint, like a Chris Manhertz and like a Jack Stoll. So that's one of the reasons. That's another reason why, and probably the most important reason why, if we're talking about the development of a seventh overall pick just a couple of years ago, in getting these guys, is to also assist Evan Neal.
True.
But at the same time, if Evan Neal's struggling that bad, will it just kind of click in his mind, just having met? Probably not. But still, it gives him another security blanket, hopefully to help him develop into the tackle we need him to be.
Yeah, good point. And the way I look at it, Nick, is I like that they went out and got these guys early in free agency, early-ish in free agency. Like there is this, yeah, they were more 1.5 slash second wave of free agency, but there's also like the third, the fourth, the fifth, which is way down the line. Because I think about, like, as it gets deeper in free agency, the tight ends that are left as it gets deeper, and then you're like circling in like Tanner Hudson, who's a good player, and you know I like him, and he had a good nice run with Cincy last year, but he's not a blocking tight end. You can get the dude Cager, you can get these like receiver type tight ends, but to get these like down and dirty blocker types, they usually get snapped up pretty quicker than you'd expect in free agency, because everybody wants a line of scrimmage type player. So I'm kind of loving both of those signings. We'll see if I'm overestimating both of them once we get to the season.
Even if they don't make the roster, like, it's low risk. Work out, you can just get rid of them. It's not like,
and I think they'll both make
cap tied up into them.
Right. Well, depending on special teams, I guess. But yeah, great point as far as, you know, we're not really allocating much caps, not guaranteed cap space there yet. Okay, Brian Daboll also spoke to the media at the NFL owners' meetings. By far the most interesting thing that he discussed, which I was surprised to hear him discuss, was the possibility of him calling plays in the 2024 season. Now, a lot of people have speculated that he called plays at times last year. I know Justin Pennick, shout out Talking Giants, Justin Pennick, did like a whole video where he thought he took over play calling duties. And, you know, there were some interesting, I thought, differences on the tape later in the season, but I thought part of that was also the differences in having the quarterback in. They ran a different offense with Tyrod versus what they ran with Daniel Jones. It's just night and day and clear. I know you know this, Nick. If you watch the tape, if that's what you do, you can see the difference in how the offense was operated. But that could also be that Daboll was operating a more vertically oriented offense as well, or calling more vertically. And he said, it's something I'm looking into. That was interesting. I think there's 20 head coaches, he said, at this point in time that call plays in the league. He says either offensively or defensively, there might be a little more. I've been doing a bunch of research, but no decision has been made. I'm still going through the process, thinking about what we need to do. I did it for a long time. He's talking about calling plays. There's a lot of things that go into it. Part of the evaluation that I talked about, there are some things that I'm looking into. I take my time and I do what I think is best for the team, whatever I feel is football is the way we go. But he did say it's something I'm looking into. So I thought that was interesting.
Not only that, he also rationalized it too. He's like, there are like 20 other head coaches in the league that do it too. I mean, they're doing it. Why can't I do it? Why can't we do it? So it's something that he's not just looking into. It's something that I feel like he is seriously considering. And the Giants had this in, what was it, 2018 with Pat Shurmur. Pat Shurmur was calling plays, and Mike Shula was the offensive coordinator who was just ensuring everything behind the scenes was up to snuff. And that is a job, too. It's not like your offensive coordinator is doing nothing if he's not calling plays. It's just a huge burden that's going to be off of his shoulders. He still needs to run a ton of meeting rooms with his offense, make sure that offense is up to snuff on everything.
Yeah, great point. And the way I look at it, Nick, is this. Daboll has had real, in my opinion, I know he, at the end, it kind of, you know, Bills fans are also very, they have such high standards for what they expect out of this team. Like, they expect Super Bowl or it's bust.
But, which is funny, know, because they haven't won a Super Bowl in how long?
Yeah, right. But it's not totally, like, I feel like I'd be at that same point, too, if I had Josh Allen as my quarterback. I'm just going to be honest
with
you.
I agree.
I would expect
just to break, win a Super breaking Bowl balls. Year.
Yeah, no, I get it. But, you know, and so they fizzled it out a little bit at the end as far as Dable's play calling goes. But then immediately after, when they come into Dorsey, they're like, oh, shit, bring Daboll back. We love him. Like, that was bad. We lost that. But Daboll has had a lot of success calling plays. And some of the route combinations he had when we broke down film when he came over from the Bills to the Giants. Now, part of those are possible because you have Josh Allen as quarterback, because you have a guy who could sit back there in the pocket, 7-8 drop, and just, like, wait for the pressure and then rip a ball to the intermediate. Like, okay, you could call different plays because of that. But some of these route combos were phenomenal. And I love the way that he called plays when he was with the Bills. Bills. So I'm a little bit excited about the possibility. And I like Kafka. I do. I think Kafka, especially in the red zone, was really good for the Giants 2 years ago. But last year, maybe not as much. But, you know, I think there's a little bit of up. Go ahead, actually.
What was the contentious nature between Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll? Do you remember that going back to midway through the 2021 season? It was at Daboll, and this was like just talking with Eric Turner and a bunch of the guys who I'm friends with who cover the Bills. Daboll wasn't running the football enough.
Oh yeah,
Daboll likes to throw. That's his thing.
True.
He's picking at six. There could be a quarterback available who he likes throwing the football. I don't know. The draft obviously factors into this too, but man. Brian Daboll at his heart wants to let it freaking rip. I think he's going to do whatever it takes to win. But right now with today's NFL, I think he notices the trend that creating explosive plays and throwing the football is a net positive for your offense, generally speaking. So if he were to take over play calling, Saquon Barkley is not here anymore. We might see our pass rate go up significantly.
Oh, yeah. I was expecting that when Daboll first took over as head coach before 2022. We were predicting that. We were expecting it. But, you know, maybe the personnel wasn't really available for them to do that. We saw a little bit of it down in the stretch, kind of, when the Giants went to, like, we talked about it, like, more of a shotgun offense. But it was still a lot of quick stuff, not a lot of the intermediate vertical stuff he did so well in Buffalo and at times with Tyrod. But we'll see if that can come back with Daboll. I will say this, though, Nick. The old Dan Schneider would have been like, oh, hell yeah, bring me the coach who's going to pass 70% of the time and be just so pass-heavy more than anyone else. The new Dan Schneider is not so sure. I've heard a lot of good coaches discuss this. I think the best coaches are the ones who marry the pass game to the run game. And that means you have to run the ball. You have to be able to disguise your plays as a run or a pass off of play action. And just not only off of play action, off of pre-snap looks, formations, and motions. And so I hope Daboll, if he does go back to calling the plays, is a little bit less pass heavy, which is a crazy thing to say. I never would have said that in like 2018, 2019. I had a very different viewpoint on this. But nowadays, I think to be the best at it, you got to have the McVay style, which is that's what makes that Rams offense tick. It's having a coach who just marries that run game to the pass game. And they do stick to the run more than people realize. Same thing obviously goes for Shanahan. And then, of course, Bobby Slowick with Houston. It's not just pass, 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 gun, gun, gun. It's a lot of marrying the run game to the pass game.
I think the Giants did that well in 2022.
They did, yes.
And they did well in the red zone in 2022 as well with Mike Kafka. We talked a lot about that. And they also added an element of just using Daniel Jones's legs on top of that. Because Daniel Jones's legs, man, like not just taking the B gap off of quick game concepts that weren't there. He scored two rushing touchdowns against the Chicago Bears that were like 19 plus yards because of play action rollouts that the Bears just were so focused on tackling.
I just wonder if any team's ever going to do that again, though. Just give Daniel Jones the lane as a rusher. Like that field, those days seem so gone of just letting Daniel Jones run a bootleg free naked. But, you know, it is what it is. Hopefully that'll happen again, I guess.
Naked.
Yeah, naked bootleg. Okay, a couple other quotes I want to talk about, or one more quote I want to talk about from Brian Daboll, and then we can get out of here. It's on new defensive coordinator Shane Bowen, who I think both of us are more excited for than the general media consensus, because he wasn't the flashy guy that you get in the coaching search. But when you start to dig into him, you start to see that this dude could be a really good coach for the Giants. And he said, we're excited to have Shane. Shane has done a great job since he's been here. He's done a great job in the running game the last few years with Tennessee and in the red zone and on third down. It's a focus for the Giants. I think he has a great way about him. He's an excellent teammate. He's good with X's and O's in the interview. He was good at fundamentals, and I think he was a very good communicator and teacher of the things he really believes in. He's done a good job with Rome. And he's talking about the Giants assistant coaches here. And then I've been pleased with how they work together in these last couple months. Very happy with the first months of Shane Bowen.
Yeah, he talked about how he likes the staff and everything like that. And you would hope that this would be the case. Like Brian Daboll, you're going to have significant say in who you hire. And I'm right there with you, man. I'm not going to say I'm like overtly excited about Shane Bowen, but I think that was a good hire considering the circumstances. The Giants lost out seemingly on a lot of their top options. And it looked like they might have been in a position where they were going to be forced to promote Jerome Henderson, which would have been awkward because Jerome Henderson would have knew. He's like, dude, I was like the fifth choice, right? And I'd rather just have Jerome Henderson be the Giants defensive backs coach because he has a proven track record of having success there. So I'm glad that they ended up getting this guy who's outside the building who's going to come with some fresh ideas, and landing someone like Brian Burns is a perfect fit for what the Giants are going to want to do
right
with those high side rushes and those four-man rushes.
Yeah, and for me, it's like, I do think that you're right. The Giants missed out on some of maybe their first options when it comes to coordinator. But like a lot of those options were hot names on the market who had a lot of trendiness on Twitter, you know, on social media, whatever, and probably in NFL circles. But not a lot of those guys had actually had experience calling a defense like Shane Bowen has. So yeah. There was a lot more inherent risk. They had upside, but there's also risk. Like Bowen was one of their only candidates who actually has done this before and has called a really good defense. Like in 2021, Titans were the one seed in the AFC. And that was a lot to do with him and the defense he called. So I almost felt like there was some like underrated, upside within that, just hiring someone who's already done this.
And he's young. He's in his 30s still. I think he's like 38 years old. He has Mike Vrabel, who's a defensive coach. He has Jim Schwartz, defensive coach, in his background. And on his staff right now, he still has Andre Patterson. He has Jerome Henderson. He has an experienced coaching staff. So I don't necessarily think we're just going to see exactly what they did in Tennessee. You might see a blend, a little bit more of a creative type of package, mixture of what happened in Tennessee and also not necessarily what Wink Martindale was doing, but there probably will be some tweaks to that given the personnel difference.
Right. That's the thing. Every great coordinator will not just bring over his system. He's not going to try to fit a square peg into a round hole. He's going to adjust it to what the Giants have personnel wise. And that's about to change too with the draft. So I'm sure Shane Bowen's going to get at least one or two pieces in that draft. Maybe we don't expect it in round one, maybe not even round two these days. We're probably expecting the Giants to go offense. You look at the offense on paper right now for the Giants and it's kind of a little insane to even think about relative to the rest of the league, at least from an on paper standpoint, but we don't know if that'll be the case. You know, we'll see how it plays out, but yeah, we'll be interested to see what Shane Bowen gets in the draft as well. But yeah, Nick, anything else that stood out to you from any of the comments from Shane, Dable, or even John Mara that we might've missed?
Not necessarily, but I will say this. I'm a little disappointed that when you were reading John Mara's quotes, you didn't try to put his voice on.
Oh, I'm trying to think in my head if I could even do a John Mara accent. It's a little deeper. But it's not that. It's not like that deep.
It's not like this.
Yeah.
Well, Jones.
You never do that.
No, I never really did.
Let me hear you do a John Mara. You're on the spot. Do a John Mara.
Tried to get Daniel Jones. Nah, shit, man. I suck too.
Not that bad, but you're still going a little too deep.
A little bit too deep. You know what, dude? Yeah. It's funny, man. You ask my friends or you ask Diana. And we've hung out. There are times where you'll hang out with me and out of nowhere without being prompted, I'll come out with an impression and it will be spot on, but I'll never be able to replicate it.
Never be able to replicate it. Impressions have never been my thing. I've never been good at impressions. I don't know why.
You got the Gettleman one.
No, Gettleman's terrible, but you know, it is what it is. All right. That's all the time we have for on the Big Blue Banter podcast today. Keep it locked and loaded. Once we turn the page, we're already turned the page. We're going to start draft profiles up on our next podcast. We're not sure yet when that's going to drop. And once that gets going, the profiles are going to come hot and heavy. We're also going to get into a lot of draft topics. We're going to have some more interviews on, some really good guests we have lined up, some people that you know near and dear to your heart, some people that have been on the podcast before, and some new people that we're lining up now as we speak. So get ready. We're going to do a live at some point, probably next week, maybe sooner than that, and a mailbag as well. So a lot of fun things down the pipe. Draft is a little over a month away. I'm really excited for it. Have a great rest of your weekend or week, and we'll talk to you soon.